Hello, welcome to the big show. Yeah, we're going to discuss all of the week news that's gone on this week, because it's not been a massive tech week. This might be fairly sprightly as a show. We might not be here at 10 o'clock like normal. So joining me to wade through all of this stuff, I've got a really cool panel, starting us off with Christopher Campion.
Evening.
How you doing, buddy?
Yeah, good. I'm good. Keep him busy.
That's awesome, mate.
Yeah. Keep him busy. A week away from the marathon now, so I'm in taper, which means a little bit less running. It's all good. A bit more relaxing.
I thought taper was to do with tape. My apologies.
Nah, just means the intensity and the distance drops right down now until race day. So yeah, get to relax a bit more and slacken off on the training front.
And it's a whole marathon.
Yep.
And it's your second this year.
My second this year.
Bloody
crazy.
So, wow. Yeah, we'll see how I go. My training's not going as well as I would have liked for this one, but yeah, just see what happens. Go for it, and I'll either do well or I'll conk out somewhere around. As long as I don't break, then I'm all right.
21.5 miles when the glycogen depletes.
Oh, hopefully not. I'm really hoping that doesn't happen. We'll see.
You'll be
we'll see.
Fine, mate. Yeah, what's
report
your PB?
Back in 2 weeks.
What's your PB?
3:43.16.
That's impressive, so, mate. That was your first one, wasn't it?
It was. If I can get anywhere around that, I will be happy.
Anything under 4 is impressive, full stop. 4 for your first one is stellar.
We'll see how we go. Fingers crossed. I'm as prepared as I can be now. It's just a case of staying away from people with colds. That's the main objective this week. If you've got a cold, I don't want to know you.
I've had the flu jab. So I'm hoping I don't get anything. Hopefully. Well, so far I'm still healthy, so yeah.
Good.
All right.
Night tomorrow.
Next to him in Angela's art studio, no less, surrounded by art, finger painting, is it, or beads and crafts? Or?
Jeffrey. All of it. I think finger painting is over here, and textiles right back here, and you can see some paper craft stuff off to the side. Yeah, whatever it is you want to do.
Awesome.
This art studio is ready to go.
And how have you been?
I have been all right. It's been a wild and busy week, and I'm really happy to see you.
Yeah, no, it's good to see you, mate, too. We missed you on Mac Show. But we did have a new boy, Luke Bissell, who came on. He was excellent, actually, I have to say.
Oh, great.
Fine addition to the team.
So that means we can all start slacking off now.
Well, yeah. I hadn't realized that we weren't.
I mean, slacking off more.
More, absolutely. Joining us on a now working line 4. Muller rocks, because Muller said, what about cables? So we tested the cable, and of course it was the cable. Patrice, how you doing?
Doing good.
Back in Germany, for those that aren't Mac Show listeners.
Yeah, I'm back in Germany for like a couple of days until Sunday, actually. And then I go to Austria.
That's not your old apartment, is it? You didn't keep that, I presume.
No. Like, I'm in Frankfurt right now.
Right, okay.
Staying at an Airbnb.
Right, and then Austria soon after.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, driving down on Sunday.
That'd be good. Just in time for the winter, mate.
Yeah, I'm not very excited about that.
Do you ski?
I hate winter. Like, I hate snow. I hate ice, so.
My God, I would love
not
it.
Not the best.
I would be going skiing.
It's a snowboard.
Yeah, I went skiing Meyerhofen.
Never been my thing.
Love it, mate.
Just get a skateboard and turn it upside down.
Yeah, right, Muller. Jesus Christ. The dulcet tones of Mr. Muller. How you doing, mate?
Hello. All right.
Yeah, changed from the chair to the stool.
Yeah, the chair was better, making rude noises. Yeah, through the Mac Show.
Oh, I just thought it was you.
Well, yeah. But I was expecting you to tell me off at any moment. Every time I moved, it made a fart noise.
That's what I mean. I thought it was you.
We've heard this every Friday night for years now. You just blame it chair.
it's definitely the chair. And it also made a creak, but yet again, that could have been my legs, but definitely was the chair.
No, it does creak badly, that chair. It's not good for an ear. We need the little orange one or use a stool. But your back's going to start hurting on the stools, mate, I promise you.
Well, I can always get a sit on, put something underneath. my butt cheeks.
Yeah. I got some new stalls today because behind me is an exhibitions company, as you know, and they build exhibition stands, and they made these custom stalls for a place that have got, like, the footrests are actually bicycle pedals, and there's a chain and flywheel on it. It doesn't actually move. It's just there, the footstool. And they were throwing them out. So that's the problem. They cool. build exhibition stands, and then they break them up and throw them away because there's nothing else for them unless they're willing to pay for
something. So if you could get some sort of generator, and you can get Muller powering your studio, earning his keep on a Friday tea time.
Well, based on the fact that we limited his speed on his Mac, or Anders did, on his Mac address, he's already had enough punishment this year.
The fun we could have had with that. You need it to go faster, you need to pull, you need to pedal harder than Muller.
Yeah, Muller, Magic Man says the feed's crap. Push, man, push.
Yeah, but you already told me off of pedaling on these already because they're stuck. You want to get some oil on them?
The week in tech. Campy's just shit himself because he's got his cup in his hand. He can't do Command V.
Oh, Patrice beat him.
Patrice is going to start us. Oh, that's the first time I think Patrice has ever been kind of like pushy. Got there and
well,
that's impressive.
It is. No, I like the new Patrice.
All right. So, as some of you may or may not have heard, there have been like a large power outages in California. And the reason for it is
I saw the tweet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The power company actually shut down large parts of the power grid because they were fearing wildfires. And it's the same company that actually supposedly caused the wildfires last year and had to pay like a massive I think even the fine and like definitely there were some lawsuits. So it's really interesting that like they're shutting down like literally like entire infrastructure. I mean, the traffic lights, nothing worked. Like the only thing that was still operational was anything that had a generator or the big tech campuses, because they had dedicated lines that were apparently not susceptible to like sparks and like could cause fires. So I wanted to hear your opinion on this. I mean, this is one of the, I think one of the first times I'm aware of that we've seen like real tangible like results of the like whole global warming or like climate change topic. Like, I mean, other than like coast eroding and like more hurricanes and all of that, but like something that really affects a lot of people. And like you can say you can tell, okay, this is something a company is doing because of climate change. And also because they don't
want to. I have thoughts on this.
Oh, okay.
Go ahead.
Jeff.
Okay. First, yes, the climate change is a huge factor in what's going on here, and it's bad because the types of problems we are seeing with wildfires like this, or the really heavy snows that we're sometimes getting in winter now, the increase in higher intensity hurricanes. Yes, this is all part of the whole global warming thing and climate change. The other problem here is totally PG&E's fault because they have neglected their infrastructure for so long that the whole power grid is just a disaster waiting to happen. And it bit them in the ass last year. Yeah. And now this year to preempt that same problem, they are just shutting off people's power. And I think it's just horrible that they didn't invest the money when they should have to maintain their systems, not even upgrade them, just maintain them.
There's a paragraph here in the story that says, prompting it to initiate the largest preventative outage in state history to reduce the risk of wildfires sparked by faulty power lines.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's what a lot of people in California are saying. I mean, they're obviously upset about it because they're saying, like, I mean, why is this necessary? Why didn't PG&E do their job, basically? What they're paid for by their customers.
Yeah.
Where do they stand in scenarios like this? Obviously, customers are going to be peed off, but PG&E, are they a power supplier? Does the infrastructure work differently then in the US compared to over here, where we have the national grid and then you have power companies utilizing the grid?
Yeah, there are individual companies that are running power grids. Some of them are...
Just the question is, do you have a generator of electricity and then a distributor of electricity, which are separate companies? And is there a national generator, or is it each individual company?
Yeah.
It's a mix.
Okay. There's no national generator of power.
Where it's just the company with their own generators. And there's others where you have these smaller companies that are just buying the power from a bigger company.
Yeah. Power brokering. Yeah. That's quite interesting. See, in the UK as well, though, Camps, you can be off power for 3 days and they don't owe you a penny.
Yeah, exactly.
And then you only get £10 a day or something like that after that. Mm-hmm. We're no better in terms of rigidity.
Yeah.
We just have a power system that doesn't go off quite as often.
Yeah. We don't have the weather conditions as well.
I mean, I bet that they're losing money because people can't, I mean, they can't use the power that you normally would use. So it's kind of bad for PG&E as well.
Once the Catherine wheels on your meter stop spinning round, mate, that's it. They're losing cash straight away.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm pretty sure that their generators or like their power plants, they might be able to shut them down to some extent, but they can't fully do that. So they still cost money. Like, it's not that they can simply stop producing and then it's basically zero. Like, that doesn't cost them anything.
Yeah, they're definitely losing money. And they lost a lot of money last year. And that was before the fines started rolling in. And then there are lawsuits that they're dealing with you. So it's not looking good right now for them.
Yeah. And I've read somewhere that they are under financial pressure as well. So some people were suspecting that whole shutdown was to save them some money somehow, but I don't think how that would work out.
There's a point.
Yeah. I don't see it saving them money.
They're saying here that why don't they move the power lines underground? Cause then the risk of wildfires disappears. And it's put, PG estimates the cost at $3 million per mile.
Wow.
Power lines underground.
Jesus. Yeah. And I mean, you can't,
wow.
You can't do that in all cases. Like the really high voltage lines are, I mean, there's a reason why they're usually not underground.
Because you don't want them grounded.
No, they don't. I mean, you can have 33 kV underground. It's just the problem you've got with it is that it's not a cost-effective method of distribution. You're far better on overhead power lines. They're cheaper by miles.
The only thing that the overhead power like cables, particularly you see it some parts in very, very cold climates where you get ice on the lines. I mean, you do get it occasionally here, but not so much. Mm-hmm. And ice can bring the lines down.
So I used to do work for Eastern Electricity, and one of the guys there was telling me one night that they had icicles on power lines, and the weight of the ice was so much that it was pulling the power lines down to the point that they were almost about to ground out. So they deadened the line off, and then they all went out with baseball bats smacking the wires.
Oh my God.
That was a fun afternoon, isn't
it? It's a helicopter.
Well, it was
now.
The middle of the night.
They get a helicopter now with a great big bot thing on it. I've saw it in a video
of
it.
Not in the night. But anyway, so they're all there and they're all smacking the lines and the lines are dropping the ice and then going back up. And
four of them got speared.
No, one kid comes in. Instead of bringing the baseball bat with him, he brings a crowbar.
Uh-oh.
So he holds the crowbar at the base and he smacks the power line. And as he smacks it, the hook of the crowbar, which is at the top, spins round. So it's actually hooked over the power line. And someone else smashes it at the same time. And there's enough weight gone off the line that the line goes poof, and it shoots this thing up out of his hands and into the sky. And everyone stood there, and then he said it dawned on someone eventually that it had gone up, but it hadn't come down. And of course, because it's pitch black, they had no idea. They're in the middle of a field. There's no lighting. They had no idea where this thing was coming down. So They were all trying to debate whether to run or whether to stand still. So they all figured they should run sideways because the chances are it would go forwards or backwards. And then they all just hunkered down in the field. And he said, we never heard it land. So,
so he should have held it.
That's pretty impressive.
But it's just like the hook turning around and it straight up in the air, catapult. But, I mean, that's it. That is the way to clear it, from what I understand. I think they probably still clear them that way, just not with robots. Yeah, I mean, there's a definite issue across the world, I think, because when you look in the 50s, there was lots of money slushing around. If you were unemployed in the 50s, you were lazy because there was jobs galore for people all over the place. And we built a lot of infrastructure, but now that infrastructure is actually beyond end of life. And we're not replacing it. You know, we've got bridges that are going to come to pieces soon. We've got power plants that are falling to bits in this country. And they do replace infrastructure. Railway infrastructure is replaced regularly. And that's done on a risk basis. So it's like you look at, well, what needs changing the most? The heavier lines that are constantly used with passengers on them as opposed to goods. You know, there's a program of renewal for a lot of that stuff. But the big infrastructure like power stations and so on and power lines, I don't know what kind of programs are in place for that. I know power stations are a little bit under change.
Yeah, I mean, I think at least in Europe, as far as I'm aware, most countries have like replacement programs. I don't know how good they are, but what I know is that the US is definitely way behind. Like the power grid in the US has been known to be not well maintained.
But I think there's a problem. I mean, there's a comment here saying that's privatization for you, says Ben in the chat room. But I think, yes, okay, that is a bit. You may get greedy firms who are trying to get money for their shareholders. And if they're paying out the shareholders with losses, then that's horrifically morally wrong. But a lot of providers, when it went to privatization, governments were still telling them how much they could charge. And if there is not a profit margin in that for the purposes of infrastructure revitalization, it doesn't get done.
Yeah, utilities have to ask permission to raise rates.
Yeah, so they're on a fixed tariff, if you like, for people. If there's no margin in there for infrastructure replacement, you got to understand why they're in this position. They haven't replaced the infrastructure. Well, yeah, but they're not getting paid enough money to replace the infrastructure, and no one's willing to pay any more.
I'm not so sure about that. I mean, I don't know about the US power companies, like how wealthy they are, but like I know a couple of European companies that have plenty of money and could invest in it and just choose to prefer profits over investments.
I was going to say, it's part of the issue here, shareholder demand to turn a profit. And obviously, in a business world where you are running on tight margins, you've got to reduce your costs if you can't increase your prices. And where's the money coming from to invest in heavily in the infrastructure?
Yeah, I mean, there's a comment here again in the chat room from Ben saying reason why some third world countries have better broadband infrastructure than places in the UK because it's new, but it's also you've got to look at the developmental history or maturity of areas. So, you know, if you go to a third world country, as inverted commas, I don't know how that would be described anyway, but housing is more temporary, if you like. There is more opportunity. Governments tend to be stronger so they can dictate and displace people. Whereas you come here I'm trying to get broadband, I'm trying to get fiber to my office. They've given me a plan. There's a government upgrade scheme where I don't pay for the upgrade. The government pays for the upgrade to the fiber and I get double the speeds and unlimited data on my new plan for the same amount of money and it's subsidized. And they've come and they've tried now for 4 months to install the service, but actually the thing that's inhibiting it is the infrastructure that's already in place. And you go, well, okay, we'll just rip up the infrastructure. Well, that's an industrial estate that has millions of pounds worth of business flowing through it. And you say, well, we'll close the road where we go into the bottom end. You know, the aluminium place next door just can't have aluminium smelting for the next week while we dig the road up. That's not an option. It's just not an option.
I've got an interesting explanation about it. You get third world because it's a bit of a misnomer.
I think it is a mentality change because what you would describe third world in the 60s is nothing of what you describe it now.
No, because first world was like US and its allies. Second world was Russia and its allies, and third world was everybody else that weren't aligned.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah, so it's actually...
So it was a third world country because it was India and it didn't give a shit about the East and West arguments, yeah.
Well, it probably did, but it didn't. It wasn't part of the
But
the
India is anything but in the classic sense of a third world country anymore.
No, they're usually nowadays we categorize them as developing and emerging countries. And I think India is an emerging country.
That's more accurate, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it is definitely true. Like there are differences in like when you put in new infrastructure in a place like that hasn't been as developed, it's simply easier because as you said, you don't have to deal with existing infrastructure as much. And you can also like upgrade to the latest thing instead of having to like work against sometimes even the investment. Like I saw that in Germany when I'm pretty sure it's the same in like a lot of other countries when it comes to fiber. Fiber is competing against copper still because copper is in the ground. Money has been invested. It is kind of working. So people are saying like, why can't we make this work instead of like doing something new? And they're trying to squeeze, like, especially the ISPs, they're trying to squeeze as much money out of the, like, sometimes, I mean, the copper lines have been in the ground for like 50, 60, 70 years sometimes.
Yeah, yeah.
So they're trying to squeeze as much out of that basically paid off investment as they can. I mean, yeah, they have upgraded infrastructure here and there and they've like done some things to it, but it's like the cable sometimes is the same cable that has been there for a long time.
I did doing some work for Eastern Electricity again. I went down to one of the training centres, and in there there was a museum piece in a glass case of a piece of cable that was the original cable that was laid from Crystal Palace to somewhere else in the London network. It was the first electrical cable in London, and it had peeled it all back, and it was actually copper wrapped in brown paper and wax with then like a vulcanised rubber over the top, and then more brown paper and wax, and then another colour of rubber on the top. And I said to him, like, oh, that must be cool. Well, you know, that's so cool having some at that age. And he said, no, there's still bits of that in the network.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, wow. Really? He said, yeah, it works fine. What's the point? why are we digging it up?
Do you think the ISPs are holding off, though, because we're going to get other technologies that don't need either? That we're going to get 5G, which is going to transmit.
Yeah, but you're not going to get the speeds. You look at the average data consumption of my household. Ellis is on computer games phenomenal amounts during the day. The actual data transfer that goes on in my house must be in the 50 gigabytes a day.
Yeah, but there's...
I'd be surprised.
Three and EE both do packages now, which guarantee you that. Guarantee you that sort of throughput. But what I mean...
What I'm saying is you won't get the necessity of speed through 5G because it's just not good enough for that.
But the thing
and
is,
it's not doing volume in that because it's too expensive to create the infrastructure to deal with the volume.
But all the Virgin modems at the moment are all repeating, aren't they? So if you're a Virgin customer and I walk into a range of your modem, I can log on as a guest.
Yeah, but they're using your like wired connection for that. So I mean, it's the simple difference is 5G or anything like that is a shared medium. Like you can only on a channel, only one device can communicate at a time. And with fiber and like any wired connection, that is to some extent different. I mean, at some point it's still shared, but it's massively different, and you can get much more bandwidth through like a fiber connection. I mean, we're still like fiber is not even fully developed. They were still finding new ways of basically sending even more and more bits through the same fiber. So it's just different. Like wired connections are still, they still have their reason for existing.
And unless you're talking about a peer-to-peer connection that is uninterrupted, the speed in on your line inwards and outwards is a semantic question.
Yeah.
But technology is moving along so quickly at the moment. I mean, aren't there some city centres now have broadband, free broadband. Which city was Coventry? We're planning on doing it soon. I think Birmingham have got it in some places, but some smaller cities are all talking about putting up Wi-Fi free.
But it's not free though, is it, Muller? It's in it, isn't it? Advertisement paid.
It's going to be, you're going to get a lot of stuff, and you'll probably be limited on what you can do.
Well, I mean, there's projects. If you look at Gary Malpass, who comes on here, Gazmaz, and if you look at Mark Culshaw's in a remote little area where there's a collection of like a dozen dwellings, and they clubbed together and paid for the fibre to come across some fields, and that was laid by the contractor, and then they had to dig their own pathways through their own estate so that the contractor could connect to the houses.
And plugged it in, didn't they?
Yeah.
I remember Gazmaz talking about that.
Yeah, and I think Mark paid a few grand for it and ended up having to dig it out himself, but now he's sat there with a, you know, 100 gig down, 100 gig up. Megabit.
Yeah,
that's interesting. It'd be interesting to see what, but I think there is a need for just some sort of survey that says, you know, what infrastructure is absolutely clapped out, and we need to find the money for this from somewhere, because otherwise we go back to being a developing country, unquote. We got an email, by the way, as well, from Rick Cobb. He listened with interest. No, that wasn't me. He listened with interest to our conversation the other day about Ring doorbells, if you remember. And he said, after the show, maybe someone at Ring listens to us, after the show, he got an email from Ring with an appointment on it. Ewan, I thought you might be interested in the information sent by Ring relating to the last big show. Whether it relates to the last big show or it's in spite of the last big show, I don't know. At least it sounds like they're looking out for our privacy. By the way, I really like my doorbell and would highly recommend it to anyone. Using the Blinks T2 cameras for other areas around the house is great because of the price of the Ring cameras are a bit exorbitant. Thanks, Rick Cobb. Ring said, and I quote, "Dear neighbor," spelt wrong, "at Ring, our mission is to make neighborhoods safer, and it's our belief that when communities work together, safer neighborhoods become a reality, which is why we've created the Neighbors app. The foundation of Neighbors is that as a customer, you're in control of security devices and personal information, and that your privacy is our priority, and that's as simple as that. The Neighbors portal is an extension of the Neighbors app that allows local law enforcement to engage with customers who want to share details about how we've designed the Neighbors portal. There is no access to devices. Law enforcement are never given access to users' cameras or devices through the Neighbors portal or by Ring. There is no direct access to users when making video requests. Your local law enforcement agency can use Neighbors to request assistance in any investigation to protect your privacy and your ability to decline the request. Law enforcement must go through the Neighbors portal when making a request. You've got 100% control if you choose not to share or if you opt out of future requests. Your local law enforcement will never know, as you'll remain totally anonymous. No user account information is used. Users are identified in the Neighbors portal only as neighbor hashtag number, although law enforcement knows the users posting content reside within their jurisdiction. Law enforcement cannot see or access the user account information, and there is no device location. The Neighbors portal does not provide law enforcement with the address at which any devices are located. Here is an example of the policy, etc. And they're going to talk a little bit more about it, but that's the essence of it. So all the stuff that we talked about, we were talking bollocks.
Unless I look at the footage and go, "Oh, I know that's us."
Well, oh, no, Jeffrey, it's not the first time. Be fair.
Oh, I know. I'm just glad that we're able to maintain a solid streak like this.
Well, yeah, I mean, we have a foundation. We have a strong foundation of talking bollocks over the years.
We have never ever proclaimed to say that we know what we're talking about.
Yeah, ever. So all of you this that pulled out your tinfoil hats last week when I said, no, that can't be true. I was right. It can't be true because it's not true because Ring have come out. And I wonder if, Ring, if you actually sent that out because of the shit we were talking on this show, please tell us, because that would be real kudos.
Well, we'd love it.
That would be pretty awesome.
Oh, man.
Oh, and if you want to give us a free Ring doorbell.
They've already done that, mate. I've got one.
Yeah, but not for us all.
Yes, no, we'll go around and say Ring all the time and just give us free Ring doorbells. Especially the new ones, because my old one doesn't charge.
Just change the batteries.
And I do love Ring doorbell. I love my Ring doorbell very, very, very much.
I thought you wired it in.
No, it doesn't work. It won't charge. I don't know why. I wired it in properly as well and it won't charge. I've even put a tester on it and it won't charge. Deep Pant, methinks Ring doth protesteth too much. No, it's not about that. I think they just, I really just hope that they said that because of us.
They don't listen to this.
Yeah. No one listens to this, Brit. Right, who's got the next story then, boys?
Yeah, camping slow today.
Is it Manganin?
Cameron, are you coming down with something?
You must.
No, I've dropped it in. Has it not appeared?
Oh, right, yeah.
It has appeared.
Lunaz will retool vintage British cars.
Yeah, I've got obviously slow technology, cool. But I quite liked this story. So Lunaz, they're a British engineering startup. The guy, David Lorenz, who is the founder of the company, has teamed up with the former Renault F1 technical director, John Hilton. And what they're doing is they've got a couple on there at the moment of classic cars that they are going to convert to electric versions. So they've started off with the 1953 Jaguar XK120. And it looks like they're going to fully refurb it, but as an electrical vehicle with, where's the spec? I think it's an 80 kilowatt. Yeah, it's an 80 kilowatt battery pack in a Jag, which is good for 375 horsepower and 516 pound per foot of torque. And I just quite liked the idea of whilst there's loads of talk around electric cars and low mileage and using them as commuter cars and, you know, day-to-day runarounds, I just quite like the idea of some of the old classics that are currently either sat in garages or worse, sat in fields festering away in scrap yards and stuff. Somebody actually pulling some out and reinventing them, retooling them and getting out onto roads as classic looking vehicles, but with an electrical engine inside it. Mm-hmm. I've not heard of other companies doing this, and I can't believe it. Well, not that I've found any others, but I can't believe it's taken a while for somebody to start doing this.
Quick shout out to Righty Boy, who's just signed into the chat room. I hope you're watching, mate, and I hope you're getting well soon, because we miss you.
Are they based in London? Because I remember seeing a company in London that does it. Are they electric? Oh, there's another one I found.
Have you found another one?
Yeah, there's one in London. I saw them on TV. And you can take any car you like. And
in there?
Into there, yeah. Somebody took an old A35.
Right, this is Silverstone, this company.
Yeah, I mean, this has been around for quite a while. There have been companies, I think even in the 90s, that did that. Like, they started even with the really bad electrical cars back then. They would, I think Beetles were very common to be converted, for example.
Yeah, I could imagine that. Like that. I mean, it says here that the next one that they're doing is a 1961 Rolls-Royce.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they have to shove a bigger 120 kilowatt battery pack in that, probably because of the size of it.
When you take the engine out, there's a lot of space.
It is only probably going to do it to the end of the drive and back per charge.
Mm.
But it'll look cool.
Yeah.
But it won't come cheap. There's the trouble. And there's 350,000.
I did actually see the one company when it was on TV, I think, and I think the A35 was going to cost about 20, 25 grand, so I think that's just over the top.
Bob Beach says, I'm definitely getting my Rolls converted.
Which one? Which one, Bob?
His Phantom Shadow, 1933, the one he had when he was an adult.
He's talking about the brown seeded ones.
Yeah. I recently, or actually today, saw a YouTube video of someone, like a company in somewhere, I think in California, who took took a Nissan Leaf and put a Mercedes, like an old school, I think 60s Mercedes on top of it, like just put the body basically around it.
And I'd love to see a load of
The customization itself was about 70 grand plus the original car plus probably the Leaf. It was a used Leaf. It was like a 2013 Leaf, so it wasn't like too expensive, probably.
Was it a brown Leaf?
I'd love to see sort of Ford do something like an Escort XR3i version, or a Mark 1 Fiesta electric version, and start getting things like that back out on the roads.
Is that your cool. Is that your youth then?
No, that's before my time. I was old enough to drive when XR3Is were out.
Why XR3i and a rah-rah skirt and Angela?
No, I'm not old enough for that. I think it was something like a Fiesta Mark 4, I think, were about when I were
Hands up if you remember Rara skirts.
I know that a lot of Teslas actually, like, once they're either the battery packs are too old or whatever, they're in accidents, they're very, like, very popular in the, like in the conversion scene. Like, people buy those Teslas, buy the battery packs, like, if they are exchanged for whatever reason, buy the drivetrains or, like, entire, like I said, cars that have had massive accidents, but they just salvage whatever they can and then build that, like, use that to like, to convert another car. So that has been very, that's a massive market for those
cars. Something like an XR3i body with a Model S in insane mode. Mm-hmm. Traction engine inside it, but that'd be amazing.
Want to see a Gas Monkey episode where they get an old Tesla and they rip out the battery hooks and put a Ford V8 in it.
Yeah. do the converse.
Yeah.
Or the Ford GT.
Oh, Magic Man says, bring back my 1600 GT Capri. The car. Oh,
can you imagine?
Oh, the only car that had a longer bonnet than the Capri was Donald Campbell's Bluebird.
I wanted a Capri. I couldn't afford one. I had an Escort Mark 1.
Massive.
Yeah, that wasn't quite as massive.
Escort Mark 1 was good. They were like Dolomite. They were the other one. They had like 3 mil thick steel all around them. Couldn't dent them.
The thing is, what I liked about the Escort Mark 1 is that with very little mechanical knowledge, you could work on it. You get a look. I look under the bonnet of my Ford now and I go, oh, and put the thing down again because I just can't work out what's
well. You've got a cover over a lot of the parts as well. Yeah. There's a cowl up your tamper.
Mm-hmm. With the old engines, you just, I mean, you could literally reach down and smack the starter motor if it would start, if it stuck. Which used to happen on mine.
Yeah, mm-hmm. The thing that bothers me is 350,000, not including the car.
Yeah. That is literally just a remodel, isn't it? You're going into Bob's garage, you're taking one of the rollers that he doesn't need anymore, and you're rocking up down here with 350k to get that converted.
I think I've seen cheaper places. There were this place, as I said, in London, they were doing more mundane cars though than that. I think those cars are probably going to cost a lot before you buy them. Mm. You know,
I mean, for anything custom, it just depends on what you want. Like, I mean, the materials you use, the technology you put in it, like how bad of a shape the original car is in. Like, it's like you can go probably from, I have no clue, like probably 20k to, I don't know, 20 million. It just depends.
Yeah, there's a lot to be done. But
So if any car, if you could get any car done, any car that you owned, reborn, which one would it be?
Oh, that's a great question. Go on, Jeff. Do you want us to come back to you?
Come back to me, because that's a tough one.
Okay. Well, Patrice, you can't say your BMW i3 either.
No, the other cars were, I mean, I've only ever owned two cars other than the i3, so.
Well, so you've only got one to choose from. It should be bloody easy. What do you?
I mean, I had an Audi 80, and what's the other one? Audi A1. Those were the only ones, so.
Were those the ones?
Neither one I would want to convert it.
Did they have the optional indicators on those?
Yes.
Mine would be the original Granada. I had one of those.
How many batteries would you need to shift that thing?
Well, this one, towards the end, it needed to go to scrappy because that's where it ended up. I only paid 150 quid for it. And I managed to keep it going for a while, but it wouldn't get through. I used to buy cars from MOT to MOT, and if I couldn't get them through the MOT, I scrapped them and bought another one. So I was only paying 100, 200 quid for a car.
So you were buying disposable cars?
Basically, yeah. It was cheaper. I mean, if you couldn't get it through the MOT, get rid of it, get another one.
I used to own a Lotus Europa, and that was a dog of a car. Where's a dog of a car to drive? It was hard work, but that in electric would have been nice, but I still wouldn't have fitted in it properly, and I still wouldn't have been able to touch the pedals properly, so I'm going to leave that one. The best car I've ever owned was a Mercedes E240. I put 255,000 miles on it, and I only stopped using it because I got hit by a VW Sirocco in Maidenhead. And they wouldn't repair it because they said it was written off, even though the damage wasn't that bad. And to this day, ouch, I miss that car. It was the best car I've ever owned. And have that back permanently, full stop, would be great. Have it back as an electric vehicle as well that was actually had some decent mileage on it would be amazing.
I think for me,
when I picked my car.
My first car was a crappy little Metro, but it was my first car, and an old Air Edge one. I think I paid about 180 quid for it when I passed my test. And yeah, it were light as a feather. It had run on a couple of Duracells. So probably that one.
Righty boy saying he'd like a DAF, which is a vehicle in the, like a lorry in this country. Semi converted to electric. Yeah, that'd be great. My current car is the best I've ever owned, says Bob Beach. Didn't say what it was, though. I'd like to convert a DeLorean, says Deep Pan. Magic Man's pulled a blinder out here. He wants an original Audi Quattro. And the other one I could think of as well would be the Lancia Stratos. That would be awesome and electric too.
That reminds me of that TV program. You've been quattroed.
Have you had a chance to have a think, Jeff?
Yes.
Right.
I would convert my Volvo C70, which was the convertible. And it was such an awesome car. I loved that thing. And to have that back and have it electric, that'd be pretty cool.
Remind me to tell you my Audi Quattro joke after the show's finished. I'm not doing it on here because it means I've got to do a particularly offensive Italian accent. So I'll do it after.
Yeah, let's not upset all our Italian.
I'll do it after the show. Good story, mate. Good story. Who's got the next one? Jeff G, straight in.
Boom.
Oh, now Disney Plus. Now I'm interested to hear about this because I saw something about it in the week, and I was quite intrigued. I don't know if we've got access to it in this country, so tell us more.
Well, no one has access to it yet because it starts in November, I think.
Right.
Other than the Netherlands.
I don't think we're going to get it.
The Netherlands got it early.
Oh, right. Okay.
Oh, let's all go to the Netherlands.
They're test driving it, basically.
So, all right, well, here's the deal. Disney has what they're calling a limited time offer, but they haven't said how long it's going to last, which tells me it's probably just going to last for a really long time, where you can get Disney Plus for $5 a month. And I find this interesting because Disney looks like they're going to have a lot of really good content on their streaming service. Mm-hmm. But they did this after Apple announced Apple TV Plus, which is $5 a month. And so they've basically cut their price in half to match what Apple's doing. And at the same time, Netflix has raised their prices. So I'm feeling like we're looking at the beginning of a price war for streaming services because Apple came in and undercut the prices, and now we're seeing other services matching that, even though like in Disney's case, they're calling it a limited time offer. But I'm expecting CBS All Access will follow suit. Right now with CBS All Access, it's $10 a month without ads. And then I think it's $6 a month with ads. And it wouldn't surprise me to see them lower their prices as well. This whole Disney thing, I'm finding very fascinating. And I'm thinking that at the price they're offering, this $5 a month, that they're just basically heavily subsidizing their streaming service to get people hooked.
Yeah, the like little asterisk that price is you have to pay for 3 years in advance.
Yeah.
Yes, you do have to pay for 3 years in advance. But, you know, that's $5 limited time offer, 3 years in advance is just another step closer to it's a $5 service.
Do you think whilst I get the undercutting the price, and I think $5 in month equivalent is brilliant, do you think the $170 up front would put a lot of people off?
Yep.
Because if you're jumping into Apple Apple TV Plus, you know, you're paying, let's say $5 a month for it. and there's an any time cancellation on that. Same with Netflix, any time cancellation. Same with Amazon Prime if you really wanted to, although I wouldn't see the point in doing it. This 170 up front, whilst a great deal, you're tied in straight away, aren't you?
You are. Yes.
I think at that point you're
assuming that Disney's going to crank out a bunch of hit content.
Mm.
And, which, I mean, it's Disney, so they have a track record of offering up a lot of good content.
Mm-hmm.
They have some really crappy stuff too, but there's a good chance you're going to get $5 worth out of the subscription every month.
Yeah. I mean, we've got Disney Live here, and the kids use it all the time. They absolutely love it. And I think it's still $5 a month we're paying for that. Whilst there's loads of the content I'd watch on here, I don't know if that would be enough for me to pay $170 up front.
Yeah, I mean, you have, like, Disney has already announced a lot of things that they will be offering. And, like, one of the things, I mean, they have all Marvel content, or I think almost all Marvel content. They have Star Wars, obviously anything Disney branded. Even the things that, like, usually were in the Disney vault and you would only get them every couple of years, every now and then, all of that is included in that service. So I think it is a pretty good deal. And like Jeff said, like, it's definitely worth $5. It's probably even worth more. Like, I'm definitely going to pay more.
I imagine a lot of people won't pay $170 up front, but there'll still be a lot of people who do. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I'm considering doing it. And I'm not a fan of paying for streaming services, and yet here I am thinking about it.
But when people buy things, they don't usually think logically. They work on impulse and they work on the way that it's presented to them. And if you said, we're going to launch next month, it's $5 a month, subscribe, people would launch at $5 a month and they would be subscribed for 3 years. They probably would be at $8 a month for 3 years. But as soon as you lay that £160 out, that's kind of like, well, that's enough food for me for a week. So I'm not so sure that I want to. You're seeing it in different terms, aren't you? You're seeing it in different frames of reference. So
yeah. Like for me, with this, if I were thinking, right, if this is something that the kids are going to watch, whilst, yes, they'll probably watch it today, next month, probably for the next 12 months, there'll probably come a time when, obviously, trends change, they'll want to watch other stuff, they'll divert back to YouTube or whatever comes out down the line. But at that point, I'm still thinking, right, well, I'm a year into it. I'm waiting for the next big thing to come out, and is that still worth my fee at that point? I think so long as they keep churning out an awful lot of content, to keep me bought into that. I think you've kind of got to go into the mindset, haven't you, that you paid up front, and it's cost. Once you've paid for it, it's not costing you anything at that point. If you go in with that mindset, fair enough. That's kind of how I think of it with Amazon Prime. You know, I've paid the lump sum. It's free now.
But it's the lump sum's an awful lot less as well, and you know that you're probably saving that in the first month on delivery if you buy a fair bit of stuff. But, you know, when you're talking about, give me the equivalent of a cup of coffee every month and I'll give you all the Disney content, is like, yeah, man, that's worth it. Whereas, like, give me enough that would feed you for an entire week and I'll give you all the Disney content, the frame of reference changes then.
So, Jeff, do you think what they might do here is that, obviously, the offer, 170 up front, that's your 3 years, equivalent of $5 a month. If you want that at that price, that's what you do. However, if you want to go in at a month-to-month subscription, any time cancel, it's going to cost you, I don't know, $8 a month, $10 a month, something like that.
Yeah. Didn't they announce the price already with, like, was it $7.99? I think it was.
I think Righty Boy is running a temperature, boys. he's put BTN Plus. It's got all the shows and Muller's Knack Darts, and you'll host the show. I'll host the show. And you're going to get to shag at least one of your sisters.
He's either recently had the tablet or it's due any moment.
Oh. Whichever pill you took last, Righty, put it under your pillow next time. All right, love?
Yes. See, great to have you back. This is one of the many reasons why I miss Righty.
We miss Righty. Righty, get better and get your ass back here, for Christ's sake.
Yes, please.
There might be suppositories, so he might not be able to.
He's on morphine. There we go. That answers that question.
Okay.
What's he on morphine for?
I don't know. Pain.
What's he doing? Banging his head against
a
wall.
So it's a Friday night, Molly. Why not?
It's a Friday night.
Oh, right. It's recreational.
Everyone in Norwich is on morphine on a Friday night.
Seriously, who doesn't unwind on a Friday night with a nice cold beer and a morphine IV drip?
A vial of morphine.
That student union's got a lot to answer for down there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, of course he works with medical equipment, doesn't he?
Mm-hmm. I guess it takes
too much hanging out with students.
Don't you have to take something to loosen your stool if you're on morphine?
Do you? Is it a bit of a constipation thing?
It kind of hardens you up, doesn't it?
Does it?
Yeah.
Let's move on.
What do you take to loosen your stool when you're on morphine?
Well, I was on morphine when I broke my arm, and they had to give me some what's it, Senacot?
The two things I do not want to hear Muller talking about is loosening your stools and hardening up.
I think we got a show title.
He did actually talk about the little blue pill that stops you rolling out of bed during the Mac show. Righty's put down, I'm in hospital, you buggers. Mate, you wouldn't have it any other way, and you know it. And he will be for another week. Fantastic. Yeah. We'll see you next Friday night, mate. We'll take the piss out of you again. We love you.
Paulins, take it off the headphones. Nurse!
We're taking the piss out of you because we love you and miss you so dearly. Get your bloody ass sorted out and get your ass back here. Doing some fun things, mate.
That's right. Who am I going to flirt with if Righty's not here?
Have we finished that story?
I think we just did.
Oh, right. I'll find mine because I can't find it. Oh, there it is.
Go on then, Muller. Talk us through yours.
It's not the best story in the world, but there wasn't an awful lot. The other one was going to be talking about knitting, but thought that might not go down too well with the rest of us. So it's AAA in America. I've discovered that most self-driving car systems just don't work. And I think I did post a story about self-driving cars in the Slack earlier. And it looks like, particularly in America, pedestrian deaths are going up because people are depending, they're driving faster because they think the cars are safer because they've got all these tools in there and these tools ain't working anymore. And apparently also deaths are starting to go up in places like Germany and Holland, which before had some of the lowest casualty figures in Europe, and it's all because the cars are not doing the job that people are expecting them to do. I'm going to have to take it off this sidecar. It's just not working for me at the moment. There's a number of case studies in there. Where's the story gone there? There's a number of case studies in there about how they've tested it with having children dart out between two cars. And 89% of the time, the car just rolled over the kid. And also, turning right is a particular problem for cars. So,
if the car was going 30 miles per hour, the system was ineffective.
And particularly ineffective in the dark. Because you remember...
And 75% of pedestrian death occurs at night.
Yeah. And also, you got to remember that the roads, particularly in America, are straighter and faster than good old Europe, where we like our curves. So, didn't Top Gear do a piss take out of them when he deliberately hit a deer on the side of the road because he thought it was a man?
I don't know.
Wow.
You have to. I'll try and find it, the clip, because it's on YouTube, I know. But this is quite worrying that people are depending on these systems to help them and they just don't work. So this is going to put another nail, I think, into self-driving cars for a number of years. If they can't even help drivers who are driving, at least warn them, how the hell are self-driving cars supposed to avoid people?
You know, the whole self-driving car thing right now, I feel like it's not even at beta testing stage.
Yeah, I agree.
And
totally.
And it feels really irresponsible that companies like Tesla are rolling out self-driving features where just the average user can have a self-driving option in their car, and they think that it's magic. They think it's like Knight Rider, and it is not that, and it is not reliable. And I guess the other side of it, though, is that if they want to really improve these systems, they need a lot of data about what goes wrong. So having people out there using these systems is helping with that. But holy crap, I mean, if the cost of gathering that data is running over people, maybe they should find a different way to do it.
Question from Magic Man, is that an American turn or a UK right turn? And the answer is an American right turn because it's AAA, so which is their RAC. And the cars tested were a Chevrolet Malibu, Honda Accord, Tesla Model 3, and Toyota Camry. So, defo American right turn.
Sorry, Mel, I'm having an issue just getting into that particular story. Is it that the safety features are... So these aren't self-driving cars, are they?
No.
Safety features meant to...
They're enhancements.
Enhancements.
For a driver.
Well, you must have seen that. Was it Volvo had their designer or something standing in front of a Volvo car outside some hotel somewhere to demonstrate that the car would come to a stop, and it never, it just rolled over him.
Yeah.
So,
that's a workman's comp claim right there.
Well, not really, because he decided to stand in front of the car. I'm pretty sure the monitor people are going, that's not a good idea. It's a car after all.
I think things like the sensors on the front of them, things like auto braking, I'm never convinced that I'm gonna trust one of them, because the sensors get dirty and things like that. They're gonna block unless they're using some sort of sonar wave technology or something like that to detect obstacles. But when I think about the features that are on my car at the moment. My favourite one is on the wing mirror, there's a little orange light. So if there's somebody in my blind spot, something in my blind spot, a car coming down from the right side, if I glance in my wing mirror, I see the little orange light, I know there's something there. And that I found that's really helped me two or three times. But I don't trust that on its own. You look in your mirrors, you turn your head, you look, I think where drivers are absolutely just relying on them and not using the skills that you pick up when you learn to drive, I think it's just absolutely wrong.
Yep.
I think the only thing I trust in my car is the parking assist. But even then, it seems to beep too early.
Mine does. They're really sensitive.
Yeah, so I tend to think, once it started to beep, I've got at least another 2 foot before I'm going to hit anything.
I wait until the light on the dashboard goes red and it screamed for at least 3 seconds before I looked at, I'm going to park in the car, rolling it back towards the garage door.
Which wouldn't
it's
be a...
that scream.
Well, I was going to say, which wouldn't be a problem apart from the car doesn't scream, it's the person you're backing over. I wait until the person
on the parking sensors, it's showing red, the beep screaming like crazy. You look at it, you've still got 2.5 foot behind the back of the car.
Yeah, even when it's solid, when it's a solid beep. Sorry, Patricia.
Yeah, I mean, you all are saying that, and then in reality, there's been a lot of research in the last, 5-10 years about, do people trust those systems, and what do they do if they trust them? And as far as I've seen, research has shown that people overall trust all those assistance systems, and they also they think they're perfect. They take out their phone while driving. We've seen those Tesla autopilot stories where people were drunk or asleep or on their phone or whatever, because they were just expecting that they were perfect, which they aren't. As I said, you say you don't trust them, but I think implicitly you still do. You still use them. Otherwise, if you weren't trusting them, you wouldn't use them at all. You wouldn't use the parking assist. You wouldn't use the mirror thing. You wouldn't use any of it.
Yeah.
I don't use it solely on its own, though. I would still check. I wouldn't just take that the word for that.
Yeah, I've got no sensors on mine. All I've got is a camera that looks out the back. And I'm always, my head's on a swivel looking around to go out. But It's there's a point from Deepan here that says the problem is that these are driving aids, but people treat them as self-driving cars already.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Having full self-driving, taking the human totally out of the mix, might improve things a little, but it won't, I don't think, based on this study.
I think you've got to blame the car companies for why they target people. Because when you listen to the ads, they make these aids out to be infallible, don't they? Yep. The way, you know, I can hear Patrice saying, yeah.
People are just an anathema to me. I went across a junction the other night and there was a cyclist coming in the opposite direction who was wearing high-vis clothing to the nines, tops and trousers. No lights on his bike.
Did he even have a bottle?
I'm like, what are you
That's
on?
So stupid.
Just pointless.
Yeah. You're right, Mar. Like the car companies are telling you, oh yeah, you can do this and that. Like even like the salespeople. Well, like I mean, I remember when I got the CRV, like the salespeople were like showing me like what I can do with it. Nobody mentioned the limitations of the system at all. Like you had to read the instruction manual to know that, I don't know, it doesn't work in like darkness or in certain lighting conditions. You should always like whatever. You should always pay attention to the car in front of you.
Yeah.
All of it. Yeah, it's. I mean, that's the reason why, like the Google company Waymo, who's working on a self-driving car, they're approaching it as we want zero drivers. Like the system should handle any and all situations.
If you want to avoid knocking
anything else, is not going to work.
But the thing is as well. I mean, you look at deaths of pedestrians. It says, oh, there is this many deaths of pedestrians. That's 16% of the total road traffic accident deaths that there are in the world are pedestrians.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, are the pedestrians hit on the pavement or are they hitting the road? Because if they're hit on the pavement, then yeah, you've got a serious problem. If they're hitting the road, then clearly your solution is segregation.
But how do you do that?
And people also paying attention when they're pedestrians. Like it's always there are always two people in that equation.
There are faulty drivers who drive too fast, too close to the car in front, and all of the things that cause deaths in the road for pedestrians when they're stepping in the street. But there are, you know, there's a designating crossing point up by my son's school, and if you stand there, people stop for you, but it doesn't line up with the alleyway that comes out from the opposite side of the school, so. Parents, children, elderly people walk through this alleyway, and instead of walking up and doing 20 yards right to go to the place where actually they'll be in control of the flow of traffic because people will stop to let them out, they stand at the corner of the road at a junction and they try and cross there. They wait for ages and then they get frustrated and they just step out anyway. And you think, well, okay, but if you get knocked over, the driver's going to get blamed when actually there was a facility to use the road safely further up, which you failed to take. There has to be it's six of one and a half a dozen of the other. There are drivers who drive irresponsibly, but there are pedestrians who are responsible for their own safety as well.
Mm-hmm.
And the police's stance is they are the vulnerable road users, so there should be extra care for them. Totally agree. But if you are vulnerable, you should act like you're vulnerable and take more care then.
I think you see it all the time. People looking at their phones, not looking where they're going. I mean, I came out of the Apple shop the other day and there was a girl walking up the steps towards me with her head in her phone. And I thought, well, I can't avoid her. You know, the steps and the new big one.
Yeah.
There's they got those, you know, barriers to stop lorries driving up and knocking people over. So you literally, I had to wait for her and she ended up bumping into me.
I've seen people walk into lampposts as they're walking, particularly London, walk straight out of the tube. Walk straight into a lamppost. Brilliant.
That's just beautiful.
No, I'm not going as far as that, Bob Beach. I don't hate pedestrians, but I think there is a need for both parties to meet in the middle somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's the problem, isn't it? If they meet somewhere in the middle, that's the...
Oh, bloody hell. Oh, Jesus
Christ. Walked into that one.
You know, the responsibility is on everyone to be aware. It doesn't matter if you're driving the car, if you're on a bicycle, or if you're on foot. Everyone needs to be aware. And in the United States, we need to work on overcoming this cultural bias against bicycles and pedestrians, because there are far too many people that feel that cars have the right of way all the time simply because that's more convenient for them as a driver.
Absolutely.
And so we need to overcome that. And I was going somewhere else with that and got kind of sidetracked. There you go. I'll just end it there.
Well, you get the car lobby here all moaning about cyclists going through lights. And yes, there are a lot of cyclists that do go through lights, but there's an awful lot of car drivers that also go through lights. They don't mention them. Because I've caught two today on my dash cam, if I could be bothered to report them.
Yeah, I see them regularly.
I mean, I do regularly see cyclists. In fact, I moaned at two police officers when one nearly knocked me over. And right in front of them, I was going, aren't you going to talk to him?
Yeah. I mean, like while I was in Phoenix, I want to say at least four or five times I almost got hit by a car. So it's definitely what Jeff said is definitely true. Like there's a bias in a lot of people where they're simply like, I'm the car, like the car is dominant force in the streets and everybody else has to stop. And they just don't pay attention to anybody else.
Yep. But there's a point here about driving in London as a cyclist, and I actually went to do work in London 10 years ago. And as I stepped out of the road, I started to look to the direction of the oncoming traffic in a one-way street, taxis, et cetera, and buses. And the guy I was with, who was a native Londoner, said, yeah, you need to look the other way as well, because the chances are you'll be more likely to be hit by a cyclist coming the wrong way down the one-way street than the taxis and buses that are coming up this way.
I found that when I've worked in London, I go out for a run. It's the bikes, absolutely the bikes. The fly out of everywhere.
This podcast and all the others is brought to you by TSO Host. We are indebted to them. We would not exist without them. And I'm not reading that out either, Bob. We need you to support them. And how do you support them? Well, you're thinking, oh, okay, but I don't need a server. I don't need any hosting. That's fine. Don't have to. All you've got to do as a BTN listener, if you want to keep this podcast around, is go online and just find your social media networks, make yourself a little note that you can repeat, cut and paste and stick it in your social. And every week, just say, thanks to @TSOHost for supporting @BritishTech. That is it. That's all you've got to do. And we stay on the air as a result because what they want is social network engagement with us. Plain and simple. If you do want hosting, they've got some great deals. They've got virtual private servers at the moment. £40 go up to £200 for a holy hell server that you'd never use the quantity of. You get 20% off that as well. So if you put in BTN20, then you'll get 20% off your hosting and any servers that you buy from TSO Host. So you do get benefit as well. And that comes back to repeat for renewing customers as well. You get it every month. You get it every time you renew your service. So it's absolutely brilliant. But please, please, please make sure you get out. A lot of you have done this actually, which is nice. Get out and put on social media. Thanks to TSO Host for putting out @BritishTech. Time for the cool things then. Start us off, Monsieur Campier.
Oh, sorry, I'm not ready. I'll put it in the chat room in a minute. My pick this week is an iOS app called Tap. So it's all basically a really, really simple thing. It's about places where you can get free water, restaurants, pubs, cafes, all that sort of thing. So whilst a lot of places, if you go in and politely ask, you know, can I fill up my water bottle, most places will say yeah. But you do get some funny places that won't. However, there's a network. I can't see if this works. Paste that in there. There we go. There's a network. It's an app that I've got a network of people that have registered on it and say, yeah, if you want your refillable water filling up, come to us and we'll do it for you. I went out for a run on the canal the other week, and the soft flasks that I used, the lid had come off, and it had spilled, unfortunately, everywhere. So I'm running down the canal, obviously. It's not like there's a lot of places on there for me to fill up the water. So stopped for a second, cranked up the app, and it showed me a little pub. To be honest, I didn't even realise it were there. Showed me the quickest route to get to it, walked in, I filled this up, no problem at all, straight out. So I just think it's just a good thing. You know, if you're carrying a recyclable water bottle, refillable water bottle, it tells you there's loads and loads of places in there that'll say, come in and we'll fill up your bottle for you.
Excellent. Good pick. And it's free.
Yeah, it's free.
Superb. Jeffrey, what have you got for us, mate?
My pick is not expensive. here's my pick. It's these come in different sizes. This is from Cocoon, and it's called a Gridit. And I'm all about organizing my cables in my bag. So, you know, it's all these interlaced elastic bands. So you can just put all of your cables or, you know, since I have a MacBook Pro, all of my dongles on it. And then on the back, it has a zipper compartment. So, you know, in the back, I have stuff, you know, like a headphone splitter jack, and which I just realized I don't have a dongle in the back so that I can actually plug that into my iPad. But anyhow, so when this size is like $15, and they come in a bunch of different sizes, and it's just awesome. I love having this thing.
Yeah, Gridit's good. Camps has just been holding up his, yeah. So to prove it, it's good.
Yeah, I've got mine, and what I love about this one is it's got quite a big pocket in it, so I can shove the little mini USB keyboard in the little pocket as well.
No, oh, nice.
Cracking.
That's so cool.
Yeah, good pick. Price though, $15 for your small one, Jeff.
Yep.
And how much was your big one?
Oh, I forget. I've had it a while. I think it were about 25.
Okay.
Yeah, pounds, I think.
Good pick, mate. Like it. Patrice, what's your cool thing?
Okay, I first have like a anti-cool thing because I'm really annoyed by basically all US like streaming services / channels. Because I mean, I subscribe to like Hulu, HBO, CBS All Access, a lot of things through YouTube TV, which is especially annoying because none of them are working here. And YouTube TV is actually supposed to work still for at least a couple of months. But it doesn't. Like all of them basically stopped working once I arrived to Germany. So you can't even travel. Like you're paying for something, you can't even travel to like another country, and it keeps working due to rights, which I don't understand. Like it's just annoying. Anyway, like so that is an anti pick. My real pick is a oldie but goodie. I want to say it has been around for a couple of years now. It's Spark Mail by Riedel. A really solid, really good email app. My favorite. Like I keep going back and forth between Mail and Spark and a couple of other apps, especially on iOS. Spark is, in my opinion, the best email app. I mean, it might depend on what you're looking for and what you need and how many accounts you have and all of that. But I've just found the universal inbox of Spark to be so much better than any other app that I've used. Like the grouping and the smarts that they've built in. It just works better, and it's the cool thing is it's free. Like they have a premium tier if you need like team communication, and they have like a more business side that you can sign up for, but they never push it on you, and the free app just keeps working. They keep updating it. They just introduced dark mode, which was awesome. So yeah, go get it.
Excellent.
Can't beat free.
Good pick.
You know, I have to add to that because it is a cool app, and on iOS, it lets you set up and use email aliases, mm-hmm. which you can't do in Apple's own mail app.
That's good. Yeah.
Yeah.
Can you use it in Northern California? Or will it cause,
or will it cause really. A wildfire? Very good.
Just asking.
Not right now.
Yeah, not right
no
now.
No power, no spark.
Excellent, mate. Muller, what have you got for us?
Well, I'm going to have to put the last one I had for Mac Show because I only had one because I didn't know I was going to be on the Mac Show. So I'm going to have Cloud Mounter again. It works on the Mac, and it's free if you got set up. If you haven't got set up, it's about 44 quid. I looked it up later. So what it does, it mounts all your social media drives like Dropbox, Microsoft Outlook, Google Drive, and many others. Mounts them like a drive. Very useful. One app does the lot. Well worth it for the if you got a setup subscription.
Excellent, mate. Very, very good. I love setup, and I'm gobsmacked constantly about how much stuff is in there.
I just thought I'd search for something to do with Dropbox because the Dropbox app is rubbish.
Dropbox is rubbish. Full stop. So.
Yeah, but I've got 20 gigabytes, and it's well worth just to drop stuff around the network. So,
can you associate a new button or URL with a specific location on a server? So, if you had your own server that had content, could you just put that in as a link and say that create a button for that?
I don't know. I've not gone that deep into it. If you look at it, it's got about 12 different services, and when you click on it, you just put your credentials in, and it goes off to them, and then comes back and says, okay, I'm happy. And they, I've only done the three, so the others I haven't got.
Excellent. My cool thing is Catalina. No, it's not. Jesus Christ, it's not. I haven't put it on yet. I haven't had the power to put it on a machine. We did identify this afternoon, actually, that the people that had the password issues were the ones that were using Keychain, because the people that said that they didn't have the issues were not using Keychain. So
interesting.
That is interesting. Yeah. That's on a sample of five. So let's not start writing angry letters to Apple on that. But that was the one trend that I picked up this afternoon, is that all the people that said, yes, I had password issues, admitted to using Keychain. So
I like Keychain.
And I don't use Keychain, so I might try put it on my app, my MacBook Air this weekend. So just the hell. Bob's going bloody hell, probably at my massively useless statistics and suggesting that five's a trend, which I know it isn't, Bob. I just thought I'd say that.
To wind you up, probably.
Where can we get a hold of you then, Mr. Campion?
Campion, you can. Twitter, all my running stuff is on Instagram, and that is just run Chris. And in the Slack room.
They're comparing in the Slack room, in the chat room, who plays the most on tech. So I won't say who it is, has said 255 quid, and then Rob's put between 700 and 900 a month. And someone's gone like, what?
Okay.
And he said, well, I pay 100 megabit lease line. That's 250 a month plus VAT. So, and he does home automation for a living. So everything he buys for work is tech. So. Deep Pan's throwing oil in my ashtray. He says, I've got Keychain and I didn't have a password issue with OS 10 update. So, did you do a clean install, Deep Pan, or did you do an upgrade as well? That's the other factor that we need to think about. Jeffrey, where can everyone get hold of you?
How about over at textexpander.com and jgammon on Twitter and Instagram, and on a bunch of podcasts.
Every podcast on the planet.
I get around.
We're still going to get you on for American Beers on Crack at the Rootless. That's got to happen.
But I know. I'm looking forward to that.
At the moment, we're recording about 9 o'clock in the morning, so it's going to be an exceptionally early start for you, which is not going to happen, or exceptionally late start.
Probably be on 6.
Probably an exceptionally early start.
Yeah. You'd have to get another one of your clones to do it.
Yeah, see if I can get them to wake up early. It's crazy. I have enough clones now. They've formed a union, and I can't just order them around anymore.
I'll see if I can push Marie back to 2 o'clock one Friday, mate, because that'll be 8 a.m. for you, won't it? So that should work.
Perfect time to start tasting beers in America. Powerful.
Well, Jeff can drink at any time of the day, mate. He's not dependent.
I'm always trying to talk somewhere.
We did alcohol-free beers today, and they were actually really good. One of them was the Brooklyn Lager one was excellent. Patrice?
Well, I'm every week on the Mac show, every now and then here in the Big Show, and everything I do on thepatrice.com.
Excellent, mate. Thank you very much. And finally, Muller.
Muller Biker on Twitter. On Instagram, I'm Muller999, and in the Slack room, and in abuse to certain people.
Excellent, mate. That's crikey trousers. I am Ewan Rankin. If you want to know any of the links that we put in, go to britishtechnetwork.com/chat, and you can get them there. I had an email from a firm this week that said, we noticed in your britishtechnetwork.com/chat, there was a reference to a PDF which is no longer valid. Can you please remove it? And it's like, no, it's a chat transcription. I can't touch it. Bugger off. We'll be back in touch to ensure this has happened. Best of luck with that then, because I don't give a shit.
Good luck.
Even if I could change it, I don't give a shit. I was going to say something else that was important then, and I've forgotten it now. I've really upset myself.
You're going to tell a joke about an Audi, wouldn't you?
That's after. I'll tell you that afterwards. It's follow on from something before Muller. Oh, bugger. That's You can get me on Ewan Rankin on Twitter. You can get the network at British Tech on Twitter. And you can follow me on 12 Space Media on Instagram as well as. And I've got a new website up, Rankin.photography. So you can go and see some of my photography there and buy me if you would like as a photographer. I will gladly come and shoot your picture. We'll be back again next week as normal. Match Show, Big Show, 4 p.m., 8 p.m. And we may have some issues looming because of time changes for America versus Britain. So bear that in mind.
That's right.
Yeah, let's make me sure we keep. But when do you do your daylight savings? Yeah,
I don't even remember anymore.
It's second week. I think it's second week in November, isn't it? Whereas we change on the 31st of October. No, the weekend before that.
Yeah, they changed it on us a few years ago, and I just never got the hang of that.
It's shaggy.
Yeah, I think it's always the second week or the second to last. Well, it's the same, the second week.
Yeah, second week in November. We're the last weekend in October, so it always messes with the schedules. We'll probably have a show that's just completely empty, but never mind. Stick with
November 3rd.
Oh, really? That early? That's the same weekend as early. That's the weekend after us then, so.
Going to be interesting.
It will be interesting. Right, we'll see you all again next week. Have a great weekend, and thank you very much for listening. Thank you more than ever for listening.